Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by cradiodifferently.com. I'm Robin Hicks.
And I'm Alice Tolakowski.
This week,
some senior citizens and a man in a wheelchair get put in a Perspex box.
Wild boys arise with guns blazing.
Kellogg spreads the love through joint agency briefing.
Gaddafi heads up life insurance campaign. So with us today in the studios of CBS Interactive is PhD Strategy Director Chris Stevenson.
Hello, Robin. How's it going?
Very good. Thanks, Chris. Welcome back. We've had you on relatively recently.
Wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, well, perhaps not. But what's been happening since at PhD?
August has been a really good, interesting month for us, actually. The focus for us really at the moment is on the work and having interesting conversations with our clients that generate good, interesting work that's effective. And some great examples of that, we've seen the Gatorade replay stuff, kind of, which we talked about last time. That's been coming to fruition. We've seen a great activation with 10 for Google Chrome and Gaga, and even a fleeting meeting of our very own Ryan Saunders with the Gaga, which was quite interesting as well and very unplanned. And also some stuff for UNICEF. So we've actually done a first in Australia with I Wonder with some dynamic creative for UNICEF. So just interesting work leaving the building, and that's a real focus for us at the moment.
Yeah, there seems to be a few jitters in the media marketplace at the moment. What's your sense over at PhD? Do you think that's accurate?
If there are, we're not really feeling them, and we're having some, you know, solid conversations with our clients, generally the conversations that I'm party to, know what they want to do, they know how they want to do it. In terms of media spend, I think that if you look at the world as it is right now, I think it would be crazy if you said there weren't some feelings of uncertainty, but I think that it is our responsibility for agencies and the responsibility of our clients to really steer the brands and make sure we're building those brands and investing in those brands through what are quite interesting times, shall we say, globally.
Yeah, we wrote a story yesterday about radio spend being flat year on year for August. Just wonder, what about the other media? Are you seeing, perhaps in a downturn or threat of downturn, is there a safe bet for media buyers?
I think that depends on which client you are. I think it depends on which category you're in. And I think it depends on what the nature of your business is. So one man's safe bet might be search advertising and search marketing and making sure that if you've got people coming to your brand and business, you're always there on the end waiting for them. And for others, it might be a saliency in market. And the safe bet is what's going to continue to give you saliency in market. For others, it's staying provocative and on the radar. So I think that it's a good question for all clients and all brands and all planners to know where are those last places that I would not advertise for my brands.
Yeah,
so it is different.
Yeah, so one event that's coming up that may well boost the media market in Australia and New Zealand is certainly the Rugby World Cup. There's lots of sponsorship dollars around that. I just wondered what your views are on which brands are sponsoring the Rugby World Cup well in terms of leveraging that sponsorship.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think that it's great with any kind of forum or event or platform like this to see brands really getting their teeth into it and brands really getting involved and leveraging that connection association with events like this. I think we're seeing some amazing work from ANZ, just the dominance that ANZ are doing and the extent to which they leverage that connection and really.
Do you mind explaining a little bit about what impressed you about that?
Yeah, well I just kind of think that the extent to which across both sides of the pond they are investing in amplification of what they've done, how they've done it. So clearly, to be lead sponsor of Rugby World Cup, certainly New Zealand, but to be a sponsor at that level is a massive investment for a brand to be making. And then what you've got to do is you've got to have the confidence of follow through. You've then got to invest in your investment and making sure you leverage that and make sure people know about it and make sure people know why you're involved and what that association is for. I think that I had a very interesting conversation with Guy Cousins, who's my counterpart at PhD over in Auckland, in New Zealand, and he was saying that actually once it gets to an event like this, the brands are about activating. You know, the all the work should have been done by now. By this point, it's reaping the rewards and it's activating. You know, the investment you've made in the run up to the event, and I think that's absolutely right. I think that's what ANZ are very, very good at. This is something they've spent a lot of time building towards, and we're now seeing that play out. Mm. In terms of their media activity. Some of the great examples, I think, are Heineken, who are just really good on the ground and in bars. I think that they really are focusing on the moment and the experience of watching the game in bars and a lot of really interesting media in bars to encourage people to watch the game and enjoy watching the game. And then another really good example from Air New Zealand, who just support the All Blacks and with just amazing fervour, and the extent to which the Air New Zealand kind of support the All Blacks is great. They've actually turned the interiors and the seating of their planes black. So the seating's actually black, so to support that. So just great use of owned media just to really show real passion and real commitment to the All Blacks and their support for it.
Yeah, I mean, around this sort of event, the same with Soccer World Cup, same with the Olympics, there's a ton of clutter. Do you ever advise clients, look, you know, there's so much volume of messaging around to just stay away? Is this perhaps a time for some brands to sit it out?
Clutter and the need for cut through are issues that are not unique to Rugby World Cup. They're not unique to big sporting events. They are the way of the world right now. And the challenge to cut through clutter and the challenge to get stand out and to get saliency in your category and in your market and beyond is as important for World Cup as it is at any time. I think there are kind of three rules that I talk to clients about when it comes to sponsorship. The first is have relevance. Be attached for something that is relevant to your brand. Don't randomly attach or connect yourself to properties. The second one is do the groundwork and make sure that when it gets to the event, you're reaping the rewards, not starting off. If you're starting to tell people about your association at the event, it's already too late. And the third thing, which I mentioned earlier on, is just this. This idea that you've got to invest in your investment. I think the real pitfall, the real danger of sponsorship is if you've got $1 million to spend, then you go looking for $1 million packages of sponsorships. You can't do that. There's a really good rule of thumb in marketing, which is for every dollar you spend acquiring a property, you should be spent between $1 and $3 telling people about it. Mm. So if you've got $1 million in your budget, the sponsorship property can be anything from $250,000. You've got to allocate investment to then amplify it and tell people about it.
Yes.
And Chris, how keen are clients to get on board with sponsorship? I mean, there's a lot of sporting events and lots of events in general to get behind. Are they quite hesitant to spend, you know, the kind of dollars that it requires?
I think that for certainly the big properties, it takes a client with bigger media budgets, and it takes a client with longer term planning. You know, a lot of these bigger properties you can't jump in and out of. You can't be there and not. So it does require a lot of forward thinking, and it requires a lot of consistency in your marketing and your marketing approach and your media plans. But that said, many of our clients are doing it. You know, PepsiCo have got a lot of sponsorship properties, to name just one. So our clients are invested and investing in big properties, but consistency and commitment in at least the medium term is the key.
And one thing that you often see at big events is guerrilla marketing. So a brand will spend a lot of money on sponsorship and then leveraging that sponsorship only to be trumped by a rival brand. Do you expect to see a lot of that this year?
I think you expect to see it in most big events like this. I think that the marketing bodies and the media rights properties that are bodies rather for the events are getting increasingly strict on this. I think that the days where Nike would buy big banners and Trump Adidas around Football World Cup and Olympicsness is probably a lot harder to achieve this these days. That said, it's happening, and of course you'll expect it to happen. These aren't inexpensive properties, and if brands want to be involved but can't afford to officially, then they will find ways to do it. Not, I mean, I think there are ways to get involved without breaking the rules entirely. It's a very interesting example from over in New Zealand at the moment, where Stein Lager, I think, are really usurping being Heineken, who are the main sponsor, by leveraging their own rugby heritage. Mm. And they're going pretty much as close to the bone as they can without breaking the rules. And good on them.
I guess it's just a question of knowing the rules and having to steer past them. Have you guys got any clients that have any guerrilla marketing plans around the World Cup?
If we did, I wouldn't possibly tell you about it. I'll tell you about that next time.
Fair enough. So next, senior citizens in a box for the sake of charity.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan Micro Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all of these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au. Charity Young Care staged a stunt in Sydney's Martin Place this week, which involved a Perspex box being erected, which housed two senior citizens and a young wheelchair-bound man for a couple of hours. The stunt was aimed to highlight the issue of young disabled Australians being placed in old folks' homes due to there basically being no alternative. And it's definitely worth pointing out that the participants were by no means trapped in the box. They had plenty of air and people could walk in and chat to them. So it was of a decent size. I think that's important. They're not just in a standard kind of box and they were left there. They were quite well looked after. Robin, when this story came through, you felt pretty strongly about it. Do you think it was a good way to attract attention for the course?
Yeah, certainly a good way to attract attention. I think it's a brilliant stunt. I mean, there's so many stunts at Martin Place. It's such an overused venue. But this one really stood out for me. I mean, to be honest, I thought that the stunt was a bit too extreme for my taste. I think it overstepped the mark. To be honest, my initial reaction was, what about these two elderly people who are stuck in a box? Don't they feel... they've been totally humiliated. I know
box.
It's for a charity. I know it's probably wrong that a young wheelchair-bound man is stuck in an old people's home for his care. That's wrong. But to put two elderly people in a box to prove this is wrong in public, I thought was a bit extreme.
But surely... I mean, they weren't put there against their will. Like, they knew that they were a part of this, surely. Chris?
I'm with Alice on this one. I kind of think that... I think, first of all, I agree. It was a brilliant stunt. I agree that it was brilliantly executed. It was a very simple, elegant point, very simply and elegantly made. I had no issue at all with two elderly people being involved. I think that it's great that they were able to contribute to the stunt and able to contribute to what is a very important point to be made. I think, actually, what it does is raise another interesting point. There's almost like an issue within an issue, which is the fact that we refer to old people being stuck in homes. And there's actually a bigger issue here around elderly care as well, knowing how we care for groups within our community, whether they're young people with disabilities or whether they're older people. I think that there's a very interesting subtext here, which is that young people are getting stuck in these dead-end places with old people. And that, for me, is as big an issue. Do we really want generations of older people to be stuck in places just to be not even living out, you know, the last years of their lives?
Yeah, I mean, sticking anyone in a nursing home, I don't think it's a very Western concept that I don't necessarily agree with. But going back to the execution, I thought it was brilliant. It's worth noting also that everything was done in-house. Not an agency was used. And also really like the mechanism of obviously using a Perspex box, passers-by were able to write what they thought of the campaign on the side of the box, which I think was a really good idea.
Yeah, I think start to finish, from the concept through to how it was done, through to the opportunities for people to engage, and even the online chatter that's been generated and the ripples that out from it have just been really, really good. And I think that it doesn't surprise me it was done in-house, because I think that this was clearly done by people who live and breathe this problem. It's done by people who clearly understand the issues, have got a very clear point to make, and found a very compelling way to make it.
Do you think that in this particular case, when you do have a group of people who are so passionate and believe so much in the cause, that they are better off staying in-house when it comes to stunts like this? You know, that do you really think they can convey their message effectively to an agency who has X amount of other clients? Nothing against the agency, but they, like you said, they live and breathe. Is that the best option, do you think?
Well, I think it's really important that if you are in a client with this kind of activity, you've just got to stay really heavily involved. I agree. You know, you're living and breathing it. You know the problem. You know the issues. And by, you know, use agencies, you know, use those skills to help you do what you need to do and achieve what you need to do. But I agree. I don't think this is something you can delegate.
Yeah, I think perhaps where they could have done with the media, with an agency at all, is perhaps a PR agency to amplify that message. But yeah, no, I agree. And I spoke to the chief executive of the charity Young Care, and she's extremely passionate, extremely single-minded about the sort of message that she wanted to get out. Obviously, she used Mumbrella as one vehicle, but I thought perhaps using another media agency would have further amplified that cause.
Well, next, The Week in TV.
The X Factor auditions have continued to perform well, going into its second week with audiences of over 1 million. In another example of Seven's stronghold on primetime, we saw the debut of Aussie Bushrangers series Wild Boys win Sunday night with 1.6 million. It beat Underbelly's 1.5 million, which was down from last week's 1.7 million. Nine opted to air movie The Hangover following Underbelly this week after axing medieval series Camelot from the main station. It received an audience of 668,000, which was just above that of Camelot's the week before. So, Chris, yeah, we've seen, we were talking before the show about an observation you made about the swinging of success between channels. And I think you had something to say about the importance of the stations branding themselves.
Yeah, and I think the conversation we were having was around, we are just seeing a lot of fluctuation in programme performance. And I think that the reality is people have got a lot of choice now. You know, people have got choice in terms of which TV they watch, in terms of the channels they've got, the number of channels, how they watch it. We're seeing the beginnings of non-linear and on-demand television. People have got more choice. We're going to see bigger fluctuations in how individual programmes perform. I think that there is too much talk around how those individual programmes are performing. There is not enough talk, I think, about how the channels can start to build brands in and around all the programming that they do have. I think if you stopped the average person in the street and said, what does Channel 7 stand for? What does Channel 10 stand for? What's Channel 9 all about? I'm not sure they'd be able to tell you. I think they could tell you about X Factor. They could tell you about MasterChef or Groon. But I don't think there's enough investment. There's not enough consideration into how the channels are adding up all these programs to be greater than the sum of their whole. That's the value. The value of channel brands will always make the programs they hold perform better.
As a strategist, could you say which brand you think has the most potence in Australia at the moment?
I mean, Declaration of Interest, we work with Channel 9, and
right.
So I've done work with them, and I'd have to say, and I think it's true to say, that the welcome home positioning and the home positioning that Nine have is strong and pertinent and relevant. And we're working with them to find ways that they can amplify that more and explore that more. But the general conversation or the general PR or commentary that I see coming out of all the main media organisations and media owners does tend to be around the numbers and of programme performance. And I think that there's an opportunity for a bigger, better debate. Of course the programme numbers are important, and of course that's the currency, and that's what we're trading on, and that's really important and valuable. But there is a different conversation to be had that's not being had right now.
There has to be, just on the Nine topic, I mean, earlier this year we saw them kind of position themselves as the home of comedy, which didn't work brilliantly. They had some comedy shows on there that didn't get the numbers I would assume they would have been hoping for. But then, you know, in the second half of the year, they had the success of The Block, and Underbelly's going well as now as well. Do you think, though, within that branding, you have to still remain pretty broad, because all of a sudden, in the first half of the year, they were comedy. Okay, now we're home improvement / drama. You know, that it's going to be a pretty hard branding to make, surely.
It's not. It's always more difficult, I think. I think media brands are some of the most interesting brands, you know, to work with. But there are plenty of examples of quite broad-ranging brand propositions and quite broad-ranging brand propositions that work really, really well. We can all think of big, successful brands around the world that stand for big, broad ideas, not necessarily more niche or specific ones.
Yeah.
And there's no exception with big media brands. I think if you actually look at the big global media brands, I think it's very clear what National Geographic stand for. I think it's very clear what something like MTV perhaps stands for, certainly the BBC. I think you can look at big media brands. There is nothing wrong with having a big, broad set of ambitions and a broad-ranging proposition.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it becoming more difficult, though, for generalist channels to brand themselves? And presumably they rely on their content, obviously, and the expression tentpole programmes that actually drive the channel because of their strongest shows. But if those shows are being chopped and changed and the content is changing so much, doesn't it become more difficult to brand a station?
No, not at all. Actually, I think quite the opposite. I think that the more you are clear on why your channel exists in the world, the easier it is to accommodate all those different program properties you have within it. No channel is defined by the programs that are on it. No, 7 is not going to be ultimately defined by X Factor. 10 is not going to be ultimately defined by the 7 o'clock project. Now, these are powerful properties those channels have, but there's no reason for those individual properties to be dictating and determining channel brand. In fact, it's very dangerous that those properties are dictating and determining what the channel brand stands for.
Next, Kellogg spreads the love through joint agency briefing.
There's more to radio than music for your headphones. Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves. Check out the case study for Nissan Micro Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone All Time Prepaid was done. See that and more at cradiodifferently.com.
FMCG brand Kellogg's has said it will now hold joint briefing sessions for its agencies in Australia and New Zealand. The move is to diversify its marketing activity beyond traditional media. Until recently, 80% of Kellogg's marketing budget had been spent on TV. Creative agency JWT, media agency Mindshare, PR agency Liquid Ideas and digital agency Tongue will now all be briefed at the same time. Media and marketing operations manager Ian Blackhall said briefing agencies one by one would almost always come up with a TV solution, so they need a fresh approach to how they come up with the ideas. The general feeling from the Mumbrella comment stream is that they're behind the times, and this has been happening for years. Chris, how do you feel about it?
You could have knocked me off my seat when I read that briefing a creative agency first, more often than not, led to a TV ad solution. I was flabbergasted. This is a really interesting story. I think it's telling that this is even a story. I think that it's generated some very interesting conversation and debate around joint briefing, around agency relationships. The fact is, this has been happening in a lot of places for a long time. That is no discredit to Kellogg's. Just because something has been done before in a lot of places for a long time doesn't make it wrong. And good on them for coming out and saying that they're doing it. What is really interesting is for me the fact that they still cling to language like lead agency. I think that lead agency as a terminology is incredibly unhelpful. I think that the fact is that lead agencies, when they exist, tend to take on roles that it shouldn't necessarily have, and I also think it's quite derogatory to the other agencies involved as well. I think that all agencies need to collaborate. All agencies need to be involved. Where there needs to be a lead, it can only come from one place, and that's the client. No client should be delegating lead responsibility for anything to an agency. Strong marketers lead.
Mm. Yeah. Just going back a few years, some in the comment stream, a lot of people were making that this is so 2004. I remember back in 2000, I think it was, the head of media for Levi's Europe talking about joint briefing is getting BBH and Starcom around the table. It's supposed to be the next big thing. He said it led to great integrated work and thinking. That's Levi's. But, as you mentioned, every brand is different. Kellogg's uses a lot of TV, 80% of their marketing budget on TV. TV works, and that strategy has worked. Ian Blackhall's been in the job for the best part of a decade, and it seems to work. So yeah, why change now? I mean, I just wondered whether certain brands suit joint briefing and certain brands could get on perfectly well with the old way of doing things.
Yeah, I think certainly the way you brief agencies and the way you work with agencies will be different for different marketers and will be different for different brands. I think that it would be unusual if what worked for Levi's in terms of how it aligned its agencies was the same for Daz or the same for Persil, you know, or the big FMCGs of the world. I think that it's perfectly understandable that there are different ways of doing this. But the point is that you do find a way to, with integrity, brief all your agencies together and share the problem with all those agencies and share the opportunity with all the agencies. If an agency's round a table, then have it round the table. Mm. And let it bring something unique to the table. And collaborating isn't something that should be an add-on or an icing on the cake. It shouldn't be, we're here to do a job as an agency, and I'll tell you what, for free, we'll throw in a bit of collaboration. Outrageous. You know, it's agency's job to collaborate. It's an agency's job to work with the other agencies that client is working with and is paying for the services of. There is a staggering lack of collaboration, actually, I think, in this market between agencies, and something's got to be done about it. And I think that the Comms Council and the MFA actually could take a very interesting stance and be doing more proactive things in this area. I think that it is not enough for agencies to be getting on with what they do and calling their counterparts once a week. Mm. Collaboration should be part of the DNA of what we do, and clients should be demanding it.
Mm. On average, how much does PhD, you know, work with the agencies they're working with a joint client?
Yeah, we work really hard, you know, to collaborate. It's part of our DNA, our planning process, which is Aetna demands it and expects it. And so part of our process, part of the way we do it, is to collaborate. So we work with any party who's got something to add to a brief at every stage, whether it's initial exploration or whether it's in channel selection. So we're working on a project at the moment where we're doing some channel prioritization. And to help us channel prioritize, we've got some key questions around the task. And we've asked creative agencies, we've asked the client, we've asked other agencies to fill in some questions to help us address that. And it will fuel that planning software and will fuel that channel prioritization project. So for us, collaborating is part of our DNA. And it's important to us that creative agencies fuel what we do. It's also important that we fuel what creative agencies do.
Mm. In your experience, could you perhaps pick out a meeting that's worked really well where a client has organised it such that each agency does get, as Ian Blackhall was saying, an equal share of voice?
I think it's actually not about the meeting. It's about before the meeting.
Right.
And I think that great agency and joint agency meetings are successful when the groundwork has been done before. Yeah. I'm a great believer in agency-only tissue meetings. I think it's very helpful for advertising and media and PR agencies to get together on their own without the pressure of a client day and tissue ideas and tissue thoughts. And then they can work up those ideas, bringing their own specialisms to the table. Is it easy? No. It's a lot harder than just being giving a media brief and then going, right, there you go, Bob's your uncle. Mm. We recommend that. It's a lot harder, but it's worth it, and the results are a lot better.
Yeah, equal share of voice sounds very all well and good, but don't you occasionally get the situation arising where there's sort of decision-making by committee? There are too many people sitting around a table, and it's hard to focus on the marketing objective.
But that comes back to what I said about strong clients. I think that if you've got agencies debating and pushing for ideas around the table, I think that's a very healthy thing. I think it's unhealthy when you haven't got someone in the room who can go, right, I've heard what we've all got to say, this is the plan. That's very unhealthy. When you've actually got someone in the room who can do that and say, I love what you said about that, I love what you can bring to the table in amplifying that, I think it's missing a component, so we've got to make sure we get X to do that. That's really healthy, and there's nothing wrong with a lot of debate going around the table. There's nothing wrong with agencies showing passion and commitment to a project. But you need that strong will and voice in the room, and it's got to be the client.
Well, next, Gaddafi and life insurance.
McCann Melbourne has developed a tactical ad for Life Broker Insurance, featuring troubled Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. So the newspaper ad reads simply, Life Insurance, with a picture of Gaddafi as the main bit of creative. Chris, clever, witty, or in poor taste?
I'm really in two minds on this one. I'm a great defender of brands' right to challenge, to be provocative, to stand out, to cut through, to get noticed. And I'm not of the belief that we should censure brands for doing things they think is right. If someone has been part of bringing this to the table, if someone has signed it off, if someone is then investing money to run it, that should be respected, first and foremost. That said, do I think it is a staggeringly brilliant bit of work? No. Do I think it's opportunist? Yes. Do I think it's open to misinterpretation? Yes. That's probably its greatest flaw. I think actually the fact that it is open to such misinterpretation, the fact that it could be interpreted as referring to the terrible suffering that's happened under the Gaddafi regime.
So not just Gaddafi's life, but the lives of many Libyans that have been lost.
Yeah, the lives of a generation of people in that country who've lived and died under his rule. I think the only way out of this is to take a step back. I think that we can debate this for days in a media advertising bubble. I think that the test will be what happens when people on the street see it. What happens when people open a newspaper and see it? Mm-hmm. That'll be the test. And at that point, the group of people that I referred to who commissioned it, made it happen, created it, signed it off, will live and die by the sword that they put out there.
No, indeed. I mean, it got absolutely slammed in the comment thread. There wasn't a positive comment about it. Initially, I thought, wow, that's clever. I actually quite liked it. But, and also thought it may have been a little bit scammy. I mean, did this actually run? It was that edgy. But yes, it did. It ran in the Oz and a few other newspapers. Mm. Alice, if you're a reader, if you opened the newspaper and saw that, Would you buy life insurance from what's the client again?
Life Broker.
Life Broker.
Well, I remembered, didn't I? probably not. I don't know whether I would associate a decision like, you know, looking after my family after I've died with the Libyan leader. I don't, you know, I can understand that why he's there and why they've put him there, I think. But in terms of making a personal decision like that, you've got to fork out money to get that insurance. And ultimately, the reason you've got it is a pretty horrible thing in the first place. You're dying and your family are going to be left without you. You know, I don't know. I think there's an insensitivity about it in that respect.
I don't think we live in a world where people see ads and then do things. I think if we lived in a world where people did see ads and then go out en masse and do things, I think, one, there'd be chaos, and two, all lives would be a lot easier. I don't think anyone's going to see any ad and go and buy life insurance off the back of it. Some might, a minority, but only if you're in the market for life insurance. I think, if anything, what it might do, it'll punch life insurance onto some people's radar. It'll get a bit of saliency. I don't think there'll be a lot of brand attribution. I think that there'll be a lot of misattribution. And I think that if it does punch through and get on some people's radars, then the biggest players the market will benefit the next time someone goes into a search engine and types life insurance. Mm.
Yeah. By brand attribution, you mean matching the brand with the actual brand.
Okay. Yeah.
But after all, I mean, this is life insurance is about the topic of death, right? And I guess that the ad is just trying to make a little bit, to make light of it, about a fairly heavy topic. Ultimately, do you think it succeeds or fails?
Ultimately, personally, I think it probably fails because of the misattribution, because it's open to misinterpretation, and because I think it's going to create as many, if not more, detractors than it does positive results for the brand. There is nothing wrong with taking political moments, topical events, and attaching your brand to them. Mm-hmm. I think
Nando's does that very well, obviously.
Yeah. Nando's does it really well. I think that there's a really simple guide, which is if you do it in a positive way and if you do it in a way which is genuinely humorous and which is perhaps not attaching yourself to the persona of a man who's probably responsible for micro-genocides, then I think it could do really well. I think back to the Obama Yes We Can campaign and the amazingness of Ben and Jerry's when, for that week, they renamed one of their flavours Yes Pecan. And Yes Pecan is a Ben and Jerry's flavour. It's just a wonderful way of, with humour and with grace and with elegance, attaching yourself to a political and to a moment in time. Do it with positivity, do it with humour, do it with grace. Don't do it like this.
Well, that's all we have time for today. A big thank you to Chris Stevenson.
A pleasure, as always, to be here, Robin.
And Alice Terlikowski.
Thank you both.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded in the CBS Interactive Studios. See you next week. Ciao for now.
Charity Young Care staged a stunt in Sydney's Martin Place this week, which involved a Perspex block. Sorry, let me start that again. Charity Young Care stated... Oh, bloody hell. Charity...